to Radio Wild. I'm Chris Anderson.
And I'm Alan Lacey. We're your co-hosts who are talking about the science of ecology and enterprise.
Here at Radio Wild, we don't think industry and conservation are two mutually exclusive ideas.
We believe every individual has a capacity for greatness.
This program speaks to innovative entrepreneurs, experts in the fields of biology and ecology,
and inspiring individuals who lead and champion important issues of the day.
Welcome to Radio Wild.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by the Minor River Lodge and the Endangered Wolf Center. The Minor River Lodge is a rustic small guest house and cabins in the heart of Oregon's spectacular Eagle Cap Wilderness. For more than 50 years, the lodge has welcomed visitors seeking an authentic wilderness experience in a place of unspoiled beauty. Accessible only by an 8.5-mile hike, horseback ride, or chartered aircraft, the lodge is located just steps from the wild Minum River and enjoys the rare distinction of being completely surrounded by protected wilderness, black bears, cougars, deer, and Rocky Mountain elk. Bird watchers can see peregrine falcons, bald eagles, golden eagles, and Farragina's hawks. The Minum River Lodge, Oregon's pristine getaway in the Eagle Cap Wilderness. Good afternoon, and welcome to another exciting episode of Radio Wild. It's Monday, March 2nd, 2015, and we've got a very interesting program lined up for you this afternoon. I'm Alan Lacey, your host for today. Our other host, Chris Anderson, is actually unable to be on air with us as he's attending some very important business with the Wolf Education and Research Center. So we just want to wish him well and send our warm regards, and looking forward to having him back on our next episode coming up on the first Monday of April. So today's episode is going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about the Red Wolf Recovery Program in the southeastern United States. Red wolves are very fascinating species. If you don't know much about the red wolf, I encourage you to get out there and kind of do some self-learning and learn about the species itself. There's been some developments regarding the recovery program over the last couple of years, and more specifically the last several months. So we're going to be talking with Regina Masati, the Director of Animal Care and Conservation at the Endangered Wolf Center in St. Louis, Missouri, about these developments and how the Endangered Wolf Center has played a role in the recovery of the red wolf. Also, we want to talk about some exciting news that's coming out of the southwestern United States regarding the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program. In February, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released its minimum population estimate for the Mexican wolf population, and currently it stands at a minimum of 109 wild Mexican wolves, which is an extremely exciting number. It's the first time the Mexican wolf population has actually topped 100 individuals since the reintroduction program began in 1998. So it's real exciting news that is coming out of there, and I actually had the privilege of being there for part of the population counts at the end of January and the beginning of February, and it was a very, very interesting process to be a part of. As many of you may know, I've been working on a documentary film on the Mexican gray wolf. It's called Gray Area, Wolves of the Southwest. I've been working on it very hard over the last several years, basically since 2011, and it's been a long time coming, but we finally wrapped up filming at the end of January and the beginning of February. Spent 9 days in the Gila National Forest in New Mexico. It's also part of the Mexican Wolf Recovery Area. And we've got some incredible footage. It ended absolutely incredibly, and I'm extremely excited to put the film together and to show what we were able to capture on film. It's truly remarkable. We've got an amazing and a great story following the life of one particular special wolf and her journey through from captivity into the wild. And it'll be a very, very moving story as well. And it also captures the hardships, the struggles, and the tough challenges that the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program faces. So we're looking forward to putting that together for you guys. But we were also there with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service while they were conducting their end-of-the-year population survey, which was really interesting and actually quite fascinating to observe how they go about counting wolves from the air in helicopter, as well as darting specific target animals that they are looking to put radio collars on, and how they bring them back into the field processing center where they do a workup on the wolf. They check its health, the vital signs. They give it vaccinations. They also check to see if there's any possible health defects with the wolves, and then they put a radio collar on it to make sure the radio collar works, and set it aside, and then they take it back out to the wild and release it in its territory as close as possible to where they actually darted the animal and picked it up in the wild. So we've got some pretty cool sequences of footage that kind of showcase that whole procedure and process. But it's important because it's a really great management tool for the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program to not only put more radio collars out on the wolves so they can get a better grasp of how many wolves they have on the landscape, but it also shows them how they move on the landscape and how which wolves pair up with which wolves. They can kind of get a more of a hands-on approach to wildlife management. It's easier for them to track wolves when they have radio collars on them, obviously. If a pair of wolves were to pair up and they don't have a radio collar, it's much harder for biologists to keep an eye on how that pack is and how they're moving on the land and potentially prevent them from getting into trouble with any livestock depredations. When wolves have collars on them, it's much easier for them to push them away from cattle and to take proactive measures to prevent any kind of livestock conflicts from occurring in the first place. So that's why the helicopter count is so important, is they can put more collars on the animals, they get a more accurate picture of the actual wild population, and it allows the biologist to get a solid representation about how the wolves will be moving along the landscape in the year ahead. And it's extremely critical because we're moving into a season when wolves are going to be choosing den sites and eventually having a litter of pups, which is another reason why it's important to put collars on these animals so the biologist can determine where they're denning and where these den sites are occurring, so they can get a good visual count of how many pups are born this year, and then they can track them through the end of the year to also document if the population increases again moving into 2016. So it's a very critical process and procedure, and it was just very incredible to be a part of to see how that all takes place. This next part of our show is brought to you in part by the Endangered Wolf Center. The Endangered Wolf Center has existed for more than 40 years, yet even in its hometown of St. Louis, it is a best-kept secret. For more than four decades, their staff, volunteers, and supporters have worked to create a center recognized for not only their achievements, but their leadership role in the recovery of the endangered species of their care. From a long list of firsts in their field to numerous success stories, their focus remains on the recovery of these top predators and the ecosystems depending upon them. Well, joining me right now is Regina Massotti. She works at the Endangered Wolf Center, and it's a privilege to have you here, Regina. How are you doing?
Good. Well, thank you for having me on, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, it's definitely an honor to have you. And just real quick, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself a little bit, what you do, and what the role of the Endangered Wolf Center is.
That'd be great. Well, like you said, my name is Regina Massotti. I'm the Director of Animal Care and Conservation at the Endangered Wolf Center in St. Louis, Missouri. The Endangered Wolf Center has been around for a long time. We were established in 1971 by Dr. Marlon Perkins and his wife, Carol. A lot of your viewers will probably know Dr. Perkins from hosting Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom back in the day. Very famous guy, kind of the original Steve Irwin or Jeff Corwin. He was the first guy to bring exotic animals and places into your living room through the TV. Well, when he started the center, the reason he did it is because on all of his travels, the the animal that really stuck out to him the most as needing help, as being really misunderstood, was the wolf. And so he started the Endangered Wolf Center to try and help animals that he could see were on the brink of extinction.
Well, that's fascinating with the fact that Marlon Perkins started that. It really kind of puts in perspective of like how long the Endangered Wolf Center has been going on and the important work that you guys do. So, like, real quick question here is, how important is returning a species to the landscape, and how does the Endangered Wolf Center play a role in that regard?
That's a great question. With the wolf specifically, it's a keystone species, and what that means that is a lot of other animals and plants really rely heavily on a keystone species. And we've seen that in Yellowstone with the wolf reintroduction program, how big of a role the wolf actually plays. And what I mean by that is Yellowstone was actually devoid of wolves for many, many decades. And in 1995, they started a reintroduction program with the wolf. And scientists started to notice a big change in the landscape from before the wolf was reintroduced to after. Basically, what they were seeing is that the elk population, the deer population in Yellowstone had skyrocketed without the wolf and other large carnivores there to really keep those numbers in check. And because of that, the elk were eating all of the plants down to nothing, and detrimental for other animals that relied on those plants for food, for shelter. And we started to see a trickle-down effect where we were losing species in Yellowstone because there wasn't any food source for them. When the wolf returned, it brought the elk numbers down to a healthy level. It also changed their behavior that the elk started to move more often on the landscape. Instead of eating the trees down to the dirt, they would prune a little bit and then move on. So they were actually probably helping the plants at that point. And why that's important is you started to see animals like the beaver, for example, come back because there were trees again and they could make their dams. And once they made their dams, different waterfowl and amphibians and endangered species of fish like the steelhead trout came back. And so wolves play a really vital role in keeping the ecosystem balanced and healthy. The Endangered Wolf Center has helped because we have focused on bringing critically endangered wolves back to the landscape. The red wolf, which is sadly down to just 62 known individuals left in the wild in North Carolina, and the Mexican wolf, which is down to just 109 wolves in the wild in Arizona and New Mexico, are the two species that we have really focused on.
Obviously, I'm a little familiar with the Mexican wolf regarding the project I've been working on. Now, the red wolf is something I am not as familiar with, and I know a lot of people probably aren't as familiar with the red wolf either. I mean, we always hear about wolves in Yellowstone and, you know, wolves throughout Canada and the Northeast and the Midwestern states where Michigan and such. But no one really knows much about the red wolf. What exactly is so special about the red wolf?
Well, that's the funny and tragic thing about it, is that you're right. A lot of people don't even know the red wolf exists. But what's amazing is it's one of the only, if not the only, large carnivore that is solely native to the United States, meaning it can't be found in any other country in the world. And if we lose a species, we're losing an American treasure, something that you can't find anywhere else. I mean, truly made in the USA animal. And Americans tend to point at other countries when they hear animals are going extinct, like the rhino and the elephant, and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe they'll let that happen. That's such a gorgeous species. But here we're doing it in our own backyard. And the red wolf is just such an amazing wolf. It used to be native to the southeastern part of the United States. So everywhere from Missouri and Arkansas down to Texas, over to Florida, and up the East Coast. And because of human encroachment, because of predator control programs that happened in the late 1800s, early 1900s that wanted to eradicate all predators from the landscape, we have whittled this poor species down to just a handful of animals left. And the reintroduction and recovery program for them started in the 70s. The reintroduction itself actually happened in the late 1980s. And since that time, we have been able to get the numbers as high as about 120 individuals in the wild. But unfortunately, over the last few years, poaching and misinformation and fear of this wolf, misguided fear, unfortunately, have really driven the numbers back down. And what we are dealing with today is a very hot political climate in North Carolina. And that is the biggest story for the Red Wolves that most people don't know, is that we actually might see this program shut down because there have been people who don't like wolves in their backyard. They think they're dangerous. You know, they're spreading misinformation about them, and they're really not. And that's a really sad way to go, that we might lose this American species.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about what is exactly going on with the program. I mean, I've heard, you know, like you were just saying, that they want to shut down the program. If that were to occur, you know, what does that mean for not only the red wolf, but other possible endangered species across the continent?
Absolutely. So in North Carolina, the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission has been partnering since the late 80s with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as far as bringing the red wolf back. And unfortunately, there has been a really dramatic shift in the political climate over the last few years. And it's really become a very negative place for wolves. A lot of misinformation is being spread. A lot of fear-based tactics from people who are anti-wolf have been spread. And they're spreading rumors that wolves will are vicious and will hurt you. Well, since the red wolf has been reintroduced in the late 1980s, no one has ever been touched by a red wolf. Wolves are shy creatures that want nothing to do with people that run away. But people hear that stuff and they start to believe it because they don't know any better. And there's the red wolf is its own unique species, Canis rufus, but people are spreading rumors that they're a hybrid and that, you know, that it's a government conspiracy to bring this wolf back. Just a lot of nonsense. And it's unfortunately detrimental not only to the red wolf if this misinformation actually gains foothold and forces U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to shut the program down, but it's detrimental to all endangered species. What could happen is that it sets a dangerous precedent that if you throw a big enough temper tantrum, that you can get whatever species program in your state shut down. And when you're trying to bring animals back from the brink of extinction, that's dangerous. That could lead to animals being lost to extinction. You know, you're working on a very short timeline to bring animals down, a very specific way and plan of how to do that, and any setback can be devastating.
Definitely. I know if it were something like that were to actually occur with the red wolf, I mean, that could set a precedent for example, the Mexican wolf program, and which was something we wouldn't want to see. And I know, like, for example, the Mexican wolves, you know, they do, you know, occasionally prey on livestock. Do red wolves have the same thing? Is that a problem with the red wolf program as well? Or?
Well, red wolves used to be native to all southeastern United States. And before their numbers started to really decline, they were never a wolf that depredated on livestock very often. And in North Carolina currently, it's not really an area that has a lot of livestock. Most people that do just have a handful of goats or sheep in their backyard for subsistence. So they haven't really dealt with it there. That's not a big issue. And like I said, red wolves are afraid of people, so they're staying away from them, and they're great for the environment. There really is no negative consequence to having a red wolf there, and that's a really sad situation that people think that they're something they don't want to have on the landscape.
So the area these wolves are currently residing in is more or less kind of an area that has very limited contact with people or people's personal property then, huh?
No, not necessarily. Unfortunately, when they started the recovery program, and that actually I think is one of the most controversial issues, when they started the recovery program, it was before they really understood wolf behavior, and they thought if we release these wolves onto federal property, they're going to stay right there. Well, wolves have large territories, and they don't see the invisible fence of property lines, and so they do go on to private property. And that's something that we really need to change in our wildlife management view for the future, is that people who have private property are just as much stakeholders and are just as much the people out there that are caring for our wildlife as the national forests, for example. And we see that with the Mexican wolf down in Arizona, New Mexico, too. that wolves will interweave onto private property and into the national forest and to the public lands. So that is one of the controversial issues, but we have not seen damage from red wolves, and again, they stay away from people.
Gotcha. So what exactly is being done then to try to prevent the species from, or the program from being shut down?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that we're doing right now is trying to, we've got a couple of programs started where we're trying to get people to write letters to the Department of Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, and also the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Dan Ash. It is rumored that they are going to make a decision within the next week or two about whether they are going to capitulate to North Carolina's request to shut down the Red Wolf program and declare the Red Wolf extinct in the wild. And if they do that, that's what I was saying earlier, could be detrimental not only to the red wolf, but also to other endangered species by setting a dangerous precedent. And the other program that we're trying to get launched is the Howl for Wolves campaign, which is just a fun way of letting the Fish and Wildlife Service and the people of the United States know that we care about wildlife. And that it's something, conservation is something that we need to take on as a priority. And all this campaign is basically every individual that's out there listening right now can make a video saying why you care about wolves and conservation, a short little sentence about it, then challenge a few other people to do the same thing, and then howl for wolves. And then just give it the hashtag #howl4wolves and share it on Facebook or Twitter or any other social media that you can. And if this can catch fire, I mean, you can see what campaigns like this have done for bringing awareness to different different topics. ALS is a great example, the Ice Bucket Challenge. I didn't know what ALS was before I even saw the Ice Bucket Challenge. Now I know what it is. And if we can do something like this for conservation and for wolves, we can make a big difference.
So hashtag howl and the number 4 wolves and make a video, talk about what wolves are, and then howl at the end of it. That's kind of the whole gist of it, right?
Mm-hmm. And then challenge your friends to do the same. The more that we can get this to spread, the better.
Is there any other things people can do to get involved other than, you know, obviously the writing the letters, howl for wolves? Are there any other things people can do to help either spread awareness or to get directly involved with trying to prevent this from occurring?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing is to become as knowledgeable as you can about the red wolf. There are great websites out there. If you look up Red Wolf SSP website, that's a great one. Just become as knowledgeable as you can and tell as many people as you can about the red wolf. Like I said, it's an American icon. It's a really an American treasure, and if we lose it, it's going to be a really sad day when my daughter grows up and has to learn about the red wolf in a history book, and we don't want that to happen. We want the species to live on and thrive and survive in the wild. And so by learning as much as you can about it and talking about the red wolf and other species that you care about to as many people as you can, we get to spread that knowledge. And so the people that are out there trying to spread rumors about wolves that are not true, they won't gain any foothold. So that's knowledge is power.
Well, Regina, we really appreciate you coming on and talking a little bit, obviously, about the Native Wolf Center and more importantly, about the red wolf and the situation. I believe it's an issue that we definitely need to take up to arms and try to see what we can do to try to change this this tide of trying to remove the red wolf program and making it extinct, so that if we can stop that and allow this wolf to continue to be on the landscape, I think we're, like you're saying, we're preserving a like a national icon here in the United States.
I agree. And, you know, one of the other things are that you can do is go see them yourself. You know, we have a Red Wolf webcam on our website, endangeredwolfcenter.org, but there's also amazing facilities around the country that had red wolves that are helping with the red wolf conservation effort. So getting to see them in person, you know, that's a really neat thing, too. Once you see them, you'll fall in love with them.
Well, they are definitely a very unique and beautiful wolf, and it was awesome having the opportunity to see them over there at the Ninja Wolf Center a couple of weeks ago when I was there. You know, I just wanted to say thank you for all that you're doing for endangered wolves, endangered canids exactly, you know, all over the the spectrum of the world with the Maine wolves and everything you've got there. It's important work, and we really appreciate all the hard work that you guys do there at the center, and keep it up.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having us on, too. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again at another point, and thanks for joining the show.
All right. Bye, Alan.
All right. Take care.
That was Regina Masotti, the Director of Animal Care and Conservation at the Endangered Wolf Center in St. Louis, Missouri. She was talking about the Red Wolf Recovery Program and the current developments that are taking place in the southeastern United States. Basically, North Carolina's Wildlife Resource Commission wants to abandon the Red Wolf recovery effort. And in January, the commission passed a resolution asking for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to declare the Red Wolf extinct, end the reintroduction program, and remove any red wolves living on private land or also in the recovery area. So it's quite a hot topic. The Endangered Wolf Center and Regina are working hard to try to prevent this from occurring. Regina mentioned a couple things that you can do also to try to prevent this from happening, because it not only means that the red wolf would be declared extinct and the program would end in the southeastern United States, but it could set a precedent for other endangered species across the continent, including such like the Mexican gray wolf in the southwestern United States or other species. So it's important that your voice is heard, and she mentioned you can write letters to the Secretary of Interior, Sally Jewell, as well as Dan Ash, the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You can also join the Howl for Wolves movement that the Endangered Wolf Center, as well as other wolf organizations across the country, are participating in. Basically, you create an informational video on why wolves, specifically the red wolf, is important to you. And then at the end of the video, give your best impersonation of a wolf by howling. Then upload the video and hashtag howl, the letter 4, wolves, and share with your friends and family and try to get this to go viral. Again, that's hashtag howl for wolves. And the more people we can get on this movement, the better the chances are that we can make a difference in making sure that the red wolf remains protected and on the endangered species list. Well, that just about wraps up another great episode of Radio Wild. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon, and be sure to tune in to our next episode, which will air on April 6, 2015. Today's broadcast was brought to you in part by the Minor River Lodge and the Endangered Wolf Center. If you would like to hear your name or company as our sponsorship for Radio Wild, be sure to contact us at info@wolfcenter.org. That's info@wolfcenter.org. We leave today's broadcast with the sound of Mexican wolves, and if you listen very closely, you'll hear the high-pitched sounds of the red wolf in the background.